Welcome to the Modern Independent, where we are on a mission to assist modern independent workers in accelerating their growth, both personally and professionally. Every year, our parent community, Indie Collective, offers two 10-week accelerator programs known as the Launchpad. In these programs, cohorts of around 80 independent consultants and coaches, just like you, gain access to an expert-led curriculum, then work together to set bigger visions and goals for their business and lives. If you're interested in learning more about our 10-week Launchpad cohorts, go to www.indiecollective.co, where you can learn about the program, hear members speak about their experiences, and apply for the next cohort. We accept applications on a rolling basis, and as a podcast listener, you'll receive priority when applying for an interview, as well as a limited-time $500 friends and family discount. Just reference the podcast in your application. And now, on to the episode.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Modern Independent. I'm your head of community here at Indie Collective, Jan Almasy, and in this segment of The Modern Independent called The Launchpad, we like to spend time exploring the stories of your peers, fellow Indie Collective graduates, and other amazing independents from around the world that are out there doing the thing and making it happen. And today, I'm really excited to be sitting down with somebody that I've known since my first Indie Collective cohort, Emily Grubman. And over the past decade, she has developed everything from brand strategy, names, tone of voice, and copywriting for a wide range of companies across a multitude of industries, and is now extremely focused on her venture called Title Case Naming. Additionally, she's always on the lookout for opportunities to use her strategic storytelling superpowers in the fight for progressive public policy and environmental and social justice, and is currently located in Portugal, traveling the world, doing what she loves doing. Emily, welcome to the Modern Independent.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So speaking of traveling the world, where are you in the world right now?
I am currently in Cascais, Portugal.
And what was the choice behind going to Portugal?
So I decided about over a year ago, I decided that it was time for me to move out of New York City. And my lease was up at the end of 2022. So I moved out. I assumed I would know where I was going to move to by the time that rolled around, but I didn't. So I sold most of my stuff. I put the rest in storage in Brooklyn, and then I booked a one-way ticket to Portugal because I'm trying to see if I can live in Europe, and Portugal seems like a pretty great place to start.
I love that. And then being able to have that freedom and flexibility to make decisions and choices like that, I think is something that's really interesting across, you know, every indie that I've had the opportunity to sit down with. I'm really curious, you know, when it comes to what you do in branding and naming and things of that nature, I talk to even people that are seasoned marketers that aren't really quite sure what goes into the process of helping somebody name something. I kind of want to just start with, you know, how did you end up choosing, or did you get chosen by this arena that you're operating in? And what was that journey like, kind of getting to a place where Title Case became your main focus?
Yeah, so I've always worked in branding ever since I graduated college. I got a job at a branding agency called Red Antler, and I was there for 5.5 years, and I was on the strategy team. So my role and responsibilities were brand strategy, copywriting, and naming was a sporadic job that would come up every now and then. So it was definitely a small percentage of the tasks that I would handle. But it was, in my opinion, the most fun. And over time, I guess my naming superpower started to bubble to the top there at Red Antler. The strategy team, we would all have separate clients, But when it came to naming, we would all collaborate and brainstorm together, at least for part of the process. And more often, my names were getting chosen even on other people's projects. And then, yeah, over time, it just became like, oh, your client needs naming. We'll make sure that Emily's in the brainstorm meeting. And then when I left Red Antler and went independent, which was 4 years ago, I just continued doing what I had done at the agency, which was writing strategies, doing website copy, sometimes doing naming. And so naming was still the most infrequent project I would get, but it was still always my favorite. And then only about a year ago or a year and a half ago did I finally realize, okay, maybe I should really just focus on the part of my career that I enjoy the most and stop forcing myself to do brand strategy and copywriting when it was like really starting to take a toll on my creative energy.
That what a interesting frame to be able to identify that thing that you love. You know, I think a lot of times I'll hear from other entrepreneurs and, you know, especially first cohort members when they first come into the cohort and they first experience like the designing for your life portion of the curriculum, that there's this like belief that there's just this immediate, or there's supposed to be this immediate light bulb moment. You're like, I know exactly what I want to do. And what I love about the way you just described that is like, it was a evolution over years of recognizing this is my favorite part of what I do. And then, you know, you mentioned it was infrequent, but whenever it came up, you were like, wow, like this is the thing. And then at some point you just find the decision, or the universe gives you the capability to make a move into a place where it's like, maybe I can make this part that is the infrequent piece of my life, but is the most enjoyable, the more frequent thing that shows up. I love that because that is way more organic. You know, it's paying attention to yourself and understanding the things that you really truly enjoy over time in different circumstances. And to be in a place where you are the person that a strategy team is like, hey, if this is happening, we need to make sure that this person is in a room, is a great indicator. Let's say, like, if you're listening to this right now and you are empathetic to that and you're like, wow, like my team always asks me to show up for this thing too. Maybe pause for a minute and give yourself some thought, you know, a pat on the back and a congratulations that this is something that could be a superpower for you. If you are listening to this right now. So you transitioned into that and you started like believing that naming is where you belonged, right? Was that before or after you found out about indie? And I guess like what I'm really curious as to what that story is as to how you discovered the cohort and made it into our family here.
Yeah, so I can share my whole indie collective journey. This has been a long one. so I first heard about Indie Collective in the spring of 2021. I was a Wingspan member, and I got an email talking about Indie Collective and, oh, you know, this is this cool program, blah, blah, blah. I totally ignored it. And then...
Same. I didn't know we were both Wingspanners. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. I totally thought it was a spam email when I first got it. I was like, nah, there's no way.
And then I don't know if this happened for you, but the CEO, Anthony, reached out to me. And so I don't know if he did this for everyone, but he like sent a follow-up email to me after maybe like a week and was like, hey, like, I really think you should check this out. And so I was like, let me see. And I clicked through and the application, because it had been positioned like, oh, if you apply and get in, I was like, that sounds like a lot of effort. So then when I saw that the application was just like a few simple questions, I was like, okay. And so I did that. And then I had a call with Sam, which was obviously amazing. And he really helped me like understand the value of Indie Collective. And so I think I was still like taking a few days to decide if I was going to do it. And in the meantime, I received a very random check in the mail from my health insurance company that basically I had like the year prior I had turned 30. So that meant I was no longer eligible for like the really cheap catastrophic health plan. And so I knew that I was going to be like pushed onto some more expensive, whatever plan, but I guess they hadn't like formally sent me an email notifying me about that. So I get this letter and this check. It's like, hey, we're so sorry we didn't inform you of this change. We want to make it up to you by giving you the difference in your premium for 5 months. So it ended up being this basically the same cost as Indie Collective. And so this magic check just fell out of thin air. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'll sign up for Indie Collective. Cause it was like within $50 of the exact cost. That felt like a sign from the universe for sure.
Yeah, no joke. I mean, you get, I also kind of received that follow-up, and that's what triggered me into following it. But I also have talked to Anthony, and not everybody that was on that list got that follow-up. So,
okay, cool. That makes me feel better.
Yeah. I think that we were just kind of lucky, in that sense. And I remember vividly actually like forwarding the first email to my spam. And I like told Sam that, and he was like, no hard feelings. Right. And, going in to a program like that, and then to have something spontaneous like that pop up, I think too often, we try to make everything super like objective or rational. And sometimes it's just like, the timing of this, the way that this showed up, you know, the other intuitive things that I have going on in my life at this point, it's like, this is a sign for me to take this leap. And that sounds like that's kind of how you took it, is like, this is my sign that I need to take this jump.
Yeah. And then once I was in, I was definitely like overwhelmed by the curriculum and all the information. Like this was all stuff. I had been independent for just over 2 years, and I had no idea what I was doing. And so all the workshops and the fireside chats and the AT meetings and all of that were totally blowing my mind. And so it was a very, the first cohort, I just like absorbed everything. I didn't put anything into practice. I didn't change anything about my business because I was so overwhelmed. And then decided that like, okay, in the fall, I'll do what Sam always suggested, which was like focus on a couple of courses and then like, you know, put those things into practice. Uh-huh. And so it was in the fall cohort. I think it was like in the kickoff or in one of those first calls where Sam was giving his little spiel, you know, so inspirational and saying like, you know, we're all here because we set out to be independent, because we wanted to like do the work we love and blah, blah, blah. And I sat there and was like, wait, I'm supposed to love what I do? I'm supposed to love my work? Because I absolutely not. And so that was when I took a beat and was like, I don't love writing strategies. I don't love writing website copy for people. Literally the only thing I love about my job is naming. And so that started me in the sort of self-questioning process of like, could I just naming? What would that even look like? Are there enough clients out there? And so that led me into the following year. And then I had been thinking about maybe doing the spring cohort. So this would be my third cohort. Wasn't sure. And then finally at the last minute, I was like, actually, let me do this only as a naming person and really use the cohort that, like, I already know how it works, but, like, focus it towards this new focus that I have. So, yeah, I've already done 3 cohorts, which I feel like is more than most people, perhaps. But I feel like it really took me a while to figure out how I should be using all that education and networking and framework to actually, like, get me on the right path to where I needed to be.
100%. I was talking to somebody yesterday during, like, my the office hours that I host, and one thing that I found that's, like, a consistency through indies that have gone through either, like, 2 cohorts, 3 cohorts. I think that our only member that has done more than 3 cohorts is Claudia, and that's just because I think Claudia is just going to be in every cohort in perpetuity. Yeah. And she, but what I found is that, like, consistently across the members that have gone through a 2 cohort, so that annual program, right, is the first cohort, they feel like a sponge, and the second cohort, they feel more like a surgeon. And that first cohort, like you were mentioning, I felt the exact same way, drastically overwhelmed. There's a whole lot of stuff I didn't know that I didn't need to know. And I felt like I was in a room with all of these other individuals that kind of had an idea what was going on. And I was, like, on the outside looking in, and it, until we got to our A teams and we were meeting with our A teams. And for those of you that aren't familiar with what that concept is, it's a group of about 6 people that meet every single Monday night after week 3, in the cohort. And it's kind of like your intimate group of 5 or 6 that kind of bounce ideas off of each other. It wasn't until I got into that room that I realized, wow, like, we're all trying to figure out how to love what we do. Like, that's what it really came down to. And that's why I love the 3 L's framework so much in living, lifestyle, and loving, and really kind of bringing those ideas together and bringing those indies into a place where you feel like you can explore yourself and you feel like you can kind of give yourself permission to, like you were saying, wow, I didn't realize I was allowed to love my work, right? Or that I could love my work, build this work that I love. I'm really interested, like, that 3rd cohort. So I haven't, I mean, like I mentioned, there's not a whole lot of people that have made it to that 3rd cohort. And so when you went through it just as a naming person, what was different about that experience as a naming person versus just the 2nd cohort, knowing, oh, I just need to pick this section and this section to kind of explore? What was that feeling like after the cohort that you went through just being a naming person? Like, what are some of the insights that came out of that?
I think it just felt a lot more focused. And it also felt like I was starting from scratch in a way. Like, even though I've been doing this type of work for a decade now, it felt like I was bringing a new business to the table, which I was. And I still feel like, oh, I've done naming for so long, but I've only had this naming business title case for under a year now. So it felt like, in a way, I was starting from square one again. But I think that was kind of nice to have that blank slate to work with, and not, because I feel like in the previous cohorts, I was always like, I don't know, I was just really scattered and like over explaining what I did, but didn't do, but liked, but also didn't like. And it was just like, I feel like I was confused, and I was probably like confusing other people when I was talking about what I did. And there were so many possible ways I could structure my business before, whereas with naming, the other reason that I chose to only move forward with naming was because it was the only thing I could reasonably productize, or at least like the structure around my naming projects. And so that also, I think, helped, where I was coming in to this fresh cohort with like a clear offering and just like a clear niche. And also I think it helped, like, because there are that many of us who just do only naming. It was also kind of a nice testing ground to see how that played with other entrepreneurs who are, in a way, my target audience for certain offerings that I have.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, listener. Sorry to interrupt the vibes. I'll be out of your way in just a second. It's Jan, the head of community here at Indie Collective. Thanks for making it this far into our episode. Just a reminder that if you're connecting with this story, you can go to indiecollective.co, where you can learn about the program, hear members speak about their experiences, and apply for our next cohort. As a podcast listener, you'll receive priority when applying for an interview, as well as a limited time $500 friends and family discount. All right, I'll get back out of your way.
Yeah. Well, so I'm curious about your experience with your A teams. Because I know out of the cohorts that I've had conversations with people with, they seem to really kind of have like a main A team that they hang out with afterwards. For me, that happened to have been like my second cohort A team. We tend to meet the most often. Do you have, out of the three cohorts, like a group of individuals that you meet with regularly still, or is it just kind of, you know, that when it comes to indie, you could reach out to somebody and talk or network if need be?
I think my first cohort A team was definitely like the most magical. And we continued meeting regularly for quite a while. I think over the past year, we haven't really been talking, but actually today I sent them all a message on our old WhatsApp thread. Cause I like a couple of them I still keep in touch with. And so I had been talking with one and then I was like, wait, we should like all get back in a Zoom room at some point just to check in and see how everyone's doing. So I would say that first one was definitely really special. And then the third one also, I think we haven't really been keeping up regularly, but I definitely, there are a couple of people who I still talk to fairly regularly from that one. I think the second cohort A team, I was in a very confused place about my business and in a really like transitioned, so there were some people there that I really connected with and a few that I still keep in contact with. But I think like I know that in that cohort, I wasn't really like, I didn't have specific questions to come to the A team meetings with. And so I wasn't really like getting anything out of it specifically because I was like, I just couldn't distill it down into asking for a certain piece of advice or something. So I think that's, I was just more disconnected like from my work as well as, yeah, the cohort at large. That was a very confusing time for me.
Right, right. Well, and I think that that's something to really hit home on and double click on if, you know, for people that are listening to this, that may feel as if when you get into the cohort, it is very like fast paced. There are a lot of people trying to do a lot of, you know, amazing things and build things very quickly. But that doesn't mean that every single cohort is the same way for you personally as you're navigating things. And that doesn't mean that as you're building an organization, you're building an independent practice, you're exploring yourself, you're asking these questions, it's impossible to make it to growth without having to navigate through some chaos. That's just the nature of building independent work. And there's a lot of self-reflection involved. There's a lot of life experience that's involved. There's a lot of, and it happens in phases over years of working at it. And I love the fact that you're, you know, creating this space right now in this conversation to say that and to have that space because I talk to so many individuals that go through them, and especially after cohort one, they're just like, I have so much to do and no time to do it. And I'm like, no, you have all of the time in the world. Now you just have a bigger toolbox to kind of work with. And so thanks for like bringing that up. I think that's something really important for people to hear.
Yeah, I feel like I'm still, and like, I think part of the reason why we haven't recorded this podcast yet is because I've been like, wait, I haven't figured everything out in order to like share with people. I feel like it, like for a while I was like, this is not an inspiring story. But I've, yes, lately kind of realized like, okay, this is going to be a work in progress for a while. That's okay. Like when I finally launched my title case website, I felt the pressure to like, okay, now I immediately have to update everyone on my list of 200, and just like kind of put it off and kept putting it off. And then I think it was because it like ended up being good, because then like, oh, I found out about this new software that I can use for my naming research. And then that led me to like restructure some of my services. And then I was finally getting to a point where I was like, oh, okay, now I've kind of figured that out. Now I can reach out to people. And then literally this last week, they let me know, like, actually our services change. It's gotten even better. And so it's now it's making me think like, okay, now I can like totally restructure, like I can lower my prices, I can restructure my offering. So it's like, I don't even know when I'm gonna finally reach out to the list of 200 people with like a set services list, but I'm not putting the pressure on myself anymore to like have it figured out and like be perfect, because it's always going to be changing.
100%. Yes. If I had like a button that could put a round of applause clip into the podcast, I would be pushing it right now. Because I really think that that's one thing that we almost, I was having a conversation with a psychologist that is a member, and a coach that's a member of our curriculum. And we were talking about wiring and rewiring the brain, and how long that takes, and how purposeful of effort it has. And for the majority of us that have stepped independent, we didn't just go from high school, college, independent. Right. The majority of us were in the traditional workforce for a period of time, learning skills, upskilling ourselves. And that comes with a degree of wiring that happens when you're in that field. And a lot of times in the traditional workforce, you're looking at, okay, I need to have my stuff together by this 6-month evaluation. I need to have this deadline met in order to satisfy this. And my value as an employee is attached to the things that I produce at the speed that I produce them and the quality that I'm capable of producing them in. And the conversation that we ended up having is that actually takes unwiring to be more self-accepting in the independent journey, because the independent journey is in perpetuity across your lifetime. It's something that is constantly changing, constantly evolving, because we as people are constantly changing and constantly evolving. And so I love that idea of taking that weight off, because I feel like if you have that weight on, you know, one of the pros might be, I'm going to get stuff done quicker and in some sort of fashion, because I'm now like berating myself to get things done at this time. But my challenge to that, and what I've heard from indies consistently, is when you take the weight off, it frees up all of this space in your brain that you didn't realize you had, because you're no longer criticizing yourself. You're trying to just be where you are and work with what you have to build towards the thing that you want to reach next. And is that something that kind of rings true in that thought process? Did you feel like there was a portion of you had to kind of bring back into yourself or unwire, so to speak, to get to that place of self-acceptance?
Totally. I feel like even though I left the agency 4 years ago, I feel like I'm still unlearning, unwiring the like 9 to 5, these are the hours you have to be productive, like that mentality of like, what did I accomplish today? What did I accomplish this week? And like, even with my more creative work and like my personal writing, like I would sometimes, yeah, I would schedule for myself like, okay, like on Wednesday, I'm going to go to this workspace. I'm going to get so much writing done. And so just like, that's not how it works. Right. And so now I'm trying to be way more flexible with these like midnight bouts of inspiration or like whenever, just trying to listen to myself more in general in all aspects of my life. And not like, I felt like for a while I had this little me on my shoulder, just like cracking the whip constantly. And it's just like, I was 100%. Being so mean to myself, and I don't have to be.
Yes. Yes. Well, that is a perfect way to describe that. The little devil on your shoulder, it'll get into your head. And the crazy thing is that it's you. It's not even an external force. It's just you beating yourself up. And I remember the first time I had that realization where it's like, wow, like the only pressure that's being applied right now is me. Why am I being so hard on myself? And I think actually, I loved one of the things that you wrote inside of the podcast pre-interview doc that I would kind of want to transition to now, which I think kind of speaks to this feeling of having that person on your shoulder. And I think as an independent, we kind of make decisions every day, every week, you know, every month, every year that either makes that voice larger or helps it kind of disintegrate. I don't think that that voice ever really truly goes away, nor should it, because we do need an accountability partner. But one thing that you said that just really hit home for me as far as like advice that we would be able to give somebody that's kind of more fresh starting off is don't get good at stuff that you hate doing. And I'm really curious about like why you phrased that way, because I love the way that that's phrased, but I'd love to hear why that piece of advice really stuck out for you.
Yeah, so that was a piece of advice I got from my old boss that I think maybe she got from an old boss of hers, but it's kind of funny because we definitely like had to do stuff we didn't like at Red Antler. But I took it with me anyways that like, yeah, if you don't like writing manifestos, like don't write any that are good, sort of like. And I think I am definitely perfectionist, and not being good at something was never really an option for me. But I think like I could at least like stop trying to get better, or stop like spending so much energy on it. And I think like I kind of had to go the extreme of like, for instance, with brand strategy and copywriting, which like I don't enjoy doing anymore, but objectively I was good at it. It was just like, okay, well, I'm not going to be bad at it. I'm just going to stop doing it altogether. And basically I'd already gone past the point of don't get good at anything that you hate doing. It's like, oops, I got really good at this thing that I don't enjoy doing anymore. And so, right. I think like before you get to that point, if you can sort of look at all the things that you're doing or you want to do or you have to do, and just like focus your energy on the stuff that you actually like, because if you get good at something that you don't like, people are just going to keep asking you to do it, which is the hole that I found myself in. And it was really hard to say no to work that people wanted to pay me to write tone of voice and brand strategy and all this stuff. And it was just like, so not appealing to me, and like got to the point where it was kind of soul sucking. So I think you can prevent that by not getting good at it in the first place.
Right. Right. It's like taking the time to do the self-reflection work to understand where your passions and like your zone of genius really lies. Like, this is the area where the things that I love doing aligns with the things that I'm really good at. And that kind of sets your trajectory. Because I do think that, like, when I read that, the don't get good at the things that you hate doing, I read that in a way where, kind of like you were saying, I'm also very much so a perfectionist. I like to try to keep a tidy ship. And I think that's more so a byproduct of growing up ADHD and, like, having to build all these coping mechanisms to just stay functional, because I couldn't keep track of anything to save my life until I got into the military. And the military really forced me to, like, if you don't keep track of these things, there will be consequences. And so it kind of formed me into this place where I had to focus on these zones, right? Of, like, this is where I'm going to get the most return for my effort. I need to learn how to ask for help in these other areas. It's not worth my time to go get good at this thing. I might need to be proficient in it. I might need to understand how to do it. Like, for example, with running your own business, I read a book called Accounting for the Non-Accountant, you know, and, like, I need to know what accountants are talking about or what my bookkeeper is asking me for, but I don't need to be a CPA. That's not my zone of genius. And in that modicum of personal reflection and self-reflection, I know one thing that I remember vividly that you actually introduced me to that helped me immensely after the first cohort was Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way. And so I engaged with that, and I still do that. I have multiple journals sitting on my desk that are just full of, like, personal reflections and random stream of consciousness. But I'd love to introduce that idea to the audience as well, if they haven't heard of Julia Cameron and The Artist's Way. How did you come across that, and how has that impacted you?
Yeah, The Artist's Way is amazing. I first heard about it. My cousin had recommended it to me, like, many years ago, and I bought it, and it sat on my bookshelf for a few years, and then I gave it away unread. And then a couple of years later, her friends who have this podcast that's no longer running called That's So Retrograde, one of them was, like, really always talking about it and, like, how great it is. And so that kind of re-inspired me. So I bought the book again, and my cousin and I did it together, which was nice. I would definitely recommend doing it with a buddy, because it just actually keeps you on track, and it's I think it's more fun. But yeah, it's all about recovering your inner creative that gets, like, stomped out as we grow up and, like, start working in the traditional capitalist workforce. And so it's all about, like, listening to yourself and, like, being nice to yourself and thinking about yourself as your inner artist child. And, like, you can, like, put a little picture of little you up by your desk. And, like, I have that. And so when I would get on myself about, like, you have to be so productive today, and, you know, you have the whole day, there's no excuse not to do what you need to do. But then framing it in the way that, like, okay, I am yelling at this, like, 5-year-old little me, and, like, that's, I can't do that to her anymore. And just, yeah, it was just a way to, like, be so much more gentle with myself and understanding of, like, that the energy, our energy flows at different times. And that's fine. And everything that we've been raised in this very, like, productivity oriented society is, like, not real and very arbitrary. And we are not assembly line machines. And then, yeah, just even, like, the morning pages, which is what you were saying, the stream of consciousness, that's been nice. It's usually either when I'm going to bed or when I'm waking up in the morning, that's when I'm starting to think about, like, oh, my to-do list and what am I going to do and blah, blah, blah. And it's just nice to, like, dump it all out onto the page and then start the day and, like, not, yeah. I would recommend it to everyone. It's great, especially for people who are in branding or marketing or like our designers, some people who are using creativity in, and I think everyone uses creativity in their job, even if you're like a lawyer, but like if you're trying to like also balance your work with a creative practice in your personal life, the artist way is great.
Yeah, 100%. I love that you mentioned that, you know, the majority of the structures that we found ourselves in or we exist in are arbitrary and kind of built. I've spent a lot of time recently because I just got introduced to an idea from a buddy of mine about John Rockefeller and the Carnegie family and their investments into education and what the mentality was at the time that these billions of dollars of 1800s money were being dumped into the education system. And one quote that really stuck out to me is from a guy named Frederick Gates. And he was the primary business advisor to John Rockefeller. You know, it was like the most wealthy individual in the nation at that time, next to the Carnegie family with Steele. And this quote like really drove me nuts the first time I heard it, because it really sunk in that this system that we have was built by man. It was built by somebody. And the quote, I'm paraphrasing here, but the quote essentially says, we do not require a nation of philosophers and scientists. We require a nation of workers. I have no intention of creating these people into men of science and philosophy. We need a nation of loyal employees.
I hate that. And, that makes me so uncomfortable.
Right, exactly. And then the follow-up to that was billions of dollars poured into lobbying to the federal government to set up the national education system. And so when you start diving into things like that, I don't want to get, you know, all conspiracy theorist right now, but, you know, you start to at least observe it for what it is, right? You observe reality for what your experience is. I cannot explain enough, if you are a creative and you're listening to this, to heed Emily's word on understanding that sometimes you will have intuitive and creative impulses. And the best thing that you can do is forgive yourself and say like, oh, it's 11 p.m. I shouldn't be working right now. But if you get this impulse, I always like to say you follow the momentum, right? When you get that impulse, you can't schedule, I'm going to be creative at 11 a.m. on a Wednesday. I like to try to create space where I know I can give myself a little bit of distance, you know, to see what perspectives come up. But very rarely is it, am I capable? It sounds like you're in the same way. And a lot of other creatives that I talk to, it's not this thing where you can take the 9-to-5 mentality and be like, I'm going to slot this time to do this thing. It's kind of a more, you know, self-awareness. And it's like a practice, like a yoga practice or a meditation practice. The creativity, I feel like, is the same way. And that's what you really unlocked for me when you showed me the writer's pages and Julia Cameron's book, because when I started to dive into that, I realized, oh, there is this barrier between myself and my inner creative. And a lot of that barrier was forged by the military and by traditional employment, because I wasn't allowed to be more free of thought and to just kind of flow, right, to find this stream. And the first time I sat down to do the 3 pages of stream of consciousness writing, I was like, what am I doing? You know, because I wanted, my internal state wanted a plan. And the entire point of that stream of consciousness writing is to go into it with no plan. And to really just let it flow. And that was so counterintuitive when I first started engaging with it. So I wanted to make sure that I gave that shout out, because like, there are so many things that I've realized over the time that I've engaged with that. And I was like, I need to make sure that I let Emily know that that was like something that has profoundly impacted where I'm at today, was being introduced to that idea. So thanks for that. And thanks for talking about it so other people can hear about it.
You're welcome. I'm so glad. I had no idea that you had picked up that book and it had such an impact. That makes me so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, me too. So when it comes to, indie and just being an independent in general, I know I relate a lot of things back to the curriculum, but and the community, but just being an independent in general, there's another thing that I saw inside of the doc that I was really interested in. And you talked about how powerful and amazing it is to have a network of people that believe in what you're doing and that consistently grows. Could you speak to the place or the power that holds in your life as an independent? What does having a network really mean to you, and why is it important?
Yeah, so I think my whole independent career has been powered by my network, basically. When I left the agency and started to do freelance work, it was like, when I left, I wasn't like, oh, I want to be a freelancer. It was more like, I need to figure some stuff out. I need to see where else I would want to work. I can't do that while still working here, because it was like just too much stress, taking too much of my time and energy. And so freelancing projects was just like, okay, well, I can still make money as I figure things out. And like, clearly 4 years later, I'm still figuring things out. But I had like people who I had worked with at Red Antler who were also freelance. They were the ones who, now that I, like, they were all mostly designers and developers, and I was like now the one strategist and copywriter who was in the freelance bubble as well. So they were all like, oh, you know, referring all these projects to me anytime they were asked, like, do you know a copywriter? They would bring me on. And so I didn't have to like apply to any jobs. They really just came to me, which was amazing.
Wow.
And then, so that's like, I give all credit to my network of friends and former colleagues who enjoyed working with me at Red Antler and wanted to continue working with me in our independent practices. And then it's just continued with Indie Collective. Like, I think that's, I mean, all the stuff that I learned in that first cohort that I was so overwhelmed by was amazing. But like, I've continued to go back to the cohorts also just to see like, okay, what new batch of people am I going to meet in this cohort? Because like, everyone, even like, just the types of people, like, I think, oh, if you think like a naming consultant is a weird out there job, like that's nothing compared to some of the other jobs that are in, like,
agreed.
Yeah, like there was, yep, a musician in my first A team, like, you know, there, it just goes to show that like anyone can be independent in any industry. And
yes,
it's nice to, I think, the variety of people in Indie Collective, like now, oh, I know a lawyer and know a coach for this type of thing and a coach for that type of thing. And like, it just makes it so that when I'm having regular conversations in everyday life, I can refer someone to anyone because I know someone in that field through Indie Collective. And it's the same, like, it comes back to me too, like people who aren't in the branding world now know a naming specialist when,
mm-hmm,
they randomly meet someone who needs help with naming.
Right. 100% agreed. I remember we had a student this past cohort, and it was his first cohort, and he is a supply chain logistics consultant that specializes in a specific part of the supply chain process for a specific industry. And I was like, the first time he booked office hours, I was like sweating, because I was like, I don't even know how to, like, this is a niche that's so niched down and outside of my realm of expertise as a marketing and branding person that I was like, I don't even know what questions to ask to be helpful. But what I found is that consistent with every other interview that I've had, regardless of niche or time in independence, as I've been calling it, and, you know, there's always these through lines that tend to manifest themselves, and it always kind of revolves around imposter syndrome, personal development, doubt in network or doubt of worth. There's all of these things that are very consistent, no matter what niche you're in, no matter what position or how long you've been doing it, whether you're just started or you've been at it 20 years. Those feelings, that's why earlier when we were talking about the little person on your shoulder, it's like that voice never actually really goes away. You just get better at negotiating with it. So we're coming up on the end of our time together here. And there's always a question that I like to ask at the end of these pods, because I love providing people with educational resources and things that set people on fire, whether it's, you know, actually has anything to do with business or if it's like a fictional storytelling series that somebody really finds inspiration in. And so the question goes, are you a reader, a watcher, or a listener? And depending on which of those you find yourself being attracted to the most, could you recommend either a book, a YouTube channel, or a podcast that you find really interesting, has been impactful for you?
Mostly a reader and a listener. But I will say, like, my listening is, my podcasts are mostly very just like entertainment focused. I don't learn a lot when I'm listening. But for reading, I really like Tara McMullen, who I believe her book is called What Works, which I haven't read yet, but it's on my list. And where I do get her content is she has a newsletter, but she also has a pretty great Instagram where she illustrates these ideas of like basically dismantling how we've been thinking about work. A lot of what we said about like really like forcing ourselves to be productive and all of that. She talks about, you know, finding better ways and like what is actually going to work for us better in both terms of like mental health and productivity. And those are all very like cutely illustrated on her Instagram. And so that's at least like a very digestible way in to her content. So I would recommend, let's see, it's at Tara_McMullen. But I definitely want to check out her book. I think she also has a podcast. I'm like just newly discovering her. So, but everything I've read or seen of hers, like always rings true. And I really like that. It's not about like how to be more productive and how to make more money. It's very much like, how can we just like live better, but also know that we have to work but make that work more enjoyable.
Awesome. So if people want to find you or get in touch with you, where is the best place for them to find Emily Grimman?
I would say my overall website is emilygrubman.com, and that links out to my naming business, which is titlecasenaming.com. So those are two websites. I also have a couple of Substacks that can all be found on emilygrubman.com. So yeah, I would just point people there. Also, I guess you can find me on LinkedIn. Oh yeah, one fun thing I've been doing on LinkedIn is sharing names that I see out in the wild that are either good or funny or really bad. And so that's just like an entertaining thing that I share in every week. And I encourage people to submit if they've seen a name out in the wild that stops them in their tracks, like take a picture, send it to me, and I'll post it.
I love that. Well, cool. So for those of you that are listening, I definitely recommend, you know, taking the time to go and check out Emily's work. She's been a fantastic influence and positive light in the community, and also is just really damn good at what she does. So take some time to go see what she has going on. If you are listening to this and you're wondering, I'm kind of in a position where I feel like I could be doing something like what Jan and Emily were talking about, but I'm not quite sure what the next steps are. I would recommend either going just straight to indiecollective.co and checking out the website, checking out the program, the curriculum there, Or if you'd rather just connect with me, I love hanging out with people. It's part of my favorite part of the this work is getting the chance to sit with entrepreneurs and help them figure out how to get from point A to point B. And so just reach out to me, Jan, looks like Jan, J-A-N, at indiecollective.io. And I will 100% try to get back to you within a couple of days and schedule some appointment time so we can sit down and explore your independent journey. Until next time, this has been another episode of The Modern Independent, and I am so grateful to have had you here with us today.